Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn and the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times. Motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as how to utilize the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and resulting outcomes. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. This is a very special time in our workplace and world when unleashing our full potential has never been more critical. And as such, we have with us today a most special guest. His name is Matt Higgins. Matt is a guest shark on ABC Shark Tank, an executive fellow teaching at Harvard Business School, and through RSE Ventures, the private investment firm he co-founded, an investor of some of America's most beloved brands. He's a graduate of the prestigious Fordham University School of Law and was the press secretary to the mayor's office in New York City. Matt works on behalf of the Global Solidarity Fund in furtherance of Pope Francis' mission to support refugees and migrants around the world. He is also an author. He wrote this great book entitled Burn the Boats, Toss Plan B Overboard, and Unleash Your Full Potential. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Matt.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, the honor is all ours. Sadly, we've only got 30 minutes. We're going to jump right into the deep end of the pool. You have an amazing origin story, Matt. Can you kindly share with us that origin story, please?
Yeah, I grew up in Queens, New York. Shout out to anyone from Queens who's listening. I grew up on Springfield Boulevard, and the background of my early life was extreme abject poverty. We would grow up on government assistance, literally blocks of government cheese from the USDA back in the day, and going to food pantries. My mother was a fiercely intelligent single mother who herself was born into abuse and poverty, and so she was raising four rotten, miserable boys and trying to survive. She actually worked for Catholic Services. Cleaning homes for the elderly. And I would go to her to these houses and sort of sit and read Beverly Cleary books and then watch my mom just trying to survive. And at the same time, she was going to college. She got her GED and went to Queens College. And so my origin story is extreme poverty, selling flowers on street corners and scraping gum under tables at McDonald's, doing everything I can as the little boy hero child trying to save his mom. And my mother was becoming increasingly disabled as she got older. She struggled with morbid obesity and problems with her knees, and we can get into it, but on theme of this show, I at one point took matters into my own hands. Lord helps those who help themselves. I internalized that at a very young age, and I
Yes.
made a radical burn the boats decision.
Wow.
That's a cliffhanger. I'm going to leave you
Oh,
there.
that is just absolutely amazing. No question about it. Now, let's fast forward a bit, please. You were the youngest press secretary to the mayor's office in New York City history. You were there for some great times, but what was it like to be with Mayor Rudolph Giuliani during the horrors of September 11th? Share
Yeah,
with
and so
us all about this,
and for
please.
the audience who doesn't know the story, so the origin of this book, Burn the Boats, was that when I was 16 years old and increasingly, desperate, I came up with a life hack that was actually inspired by my mother. That if I could take my GED at 16 and do well enough, I could go into I could start college and get a better paying job. That is the entire origin of my life philosophy. Which is you have to trust your internal instincts. And everyone around me said that's absolutely crazy. I mean, you don't drop out of school on purpose. But I knew there was an alternative path, and I had to trust my instincts that we were in a race against time, my mother and I. So when I was 14 years old, I decided the only way I'm going to go through with this crazy plan is to give myself no option to retreat, to burn the boats. And I sabotaged my education, got left back 2 years in a row, failed every class except for typing, because that would be useful, which it is to this day, very useful. And I dropped out and I entered college. And in the span of a decade, I went from making, $5 an hour at a deli working overnight to becoming at age 26, the youngest press secretary to the mayor of New York. The reason why I
Wow.
share this story is I went to work that morning, and again, at home, everything was deteriorating and crumbling into the ground, and I was living a secret life. And when I got to work that day, my mother had called me at 10:30, and she had called an ambulance, and she died that day. So she died.
Oh.
So I share that for a few reasons. My instincts were correct that we were the situation was dire. I unfortunately ran out of time before I could change the course of her life. And then I started working for the mayor that day. The mayor was amazing, by the way. He asked if there's anything I could do, and I said, Mayor, the one experience in this world that gave my mother any sense of dignity was going to college. She loved that place. And if you could help me bring the casket around the campus, that would be amazing. And he gave her police escort. When everyone came to the funeral, my brother turned to me and said, "Mom, was Mom a made woman? Who the hell are these people here?" It's like she was like a mafia don. Anyway, so a really horrible day, but at the same time set in motion a lot of things that hopefully helped civilization. And so when 9/11 happened, and I was with the mayor, I had been so much through so much crisis in my personal life. I felt like I'd endured everything that I felt like God put me in this place, that I was the right person at the right time to manage the attacks and be alongside the mayor. So for the next 90 days, part of our job was to shine a light on the horror of what happened at Ground Zero. And we brought every president and prime minister on Earth to the site. I mean,
Wow.
I walked Ground Zero, believe it or not, with Vladimir Putin, with Tony Blair, the Prime Minister of England. Like,
Wow.
it was pretty incredible. So, look, Giuliani, it's sad, how things have evolved, but I like to remember him from Giuliani version 1.0, and the way America's mayor at the time, because he was truly extraordinary. So, and then long story short, I decided soon after the attacks that I wasn't going to leave until we had a plan in motion to get the city back on its ground, back on its feet. So I actually moved to Ground Zero. I got an apartment overlooking the inferno, and I lived there for 2 years. First employee of an agency set up to rebuild the Trade Center, one of the first five, and that's
Wow.
what I did for 2 years of my life. I helped oversee the redevelopment.
Boy, that is absolutely amazing. Let's talk more, please, about burn the boats. I think you've alluded to some of this, but let's peel the onion. What motivated you at this time to write this great book?
To write the book? Well, so I throughout when I look back on my life, and I was like, okay, what's the connective tissue? What's the teaching? What's the point of my story? I would say, what's the moral? I think we all have, what's the moral of our own personal story? What's the moral of my story? And I think it's because when my back was against the wall, I tend to make the best decisions. And yet risk taking doesn't come naturally to me. I'm half the time I'm an anxious mess, like a lot of people listening to this interview. And so I just thought, interesting that we tell our children whenever they come up with a big, bold dream, you want to be the next Taylor Swift. And you're like, oh, that's wonderful, darling, but you might want to become a CPA as well, even though your child's like, I hate math, And what we do is we're subconsciously telling people it's not really safe. And yet, I owe all my career and all the wealth that I've accumulated and the success I've had is for putting myself in problematic situations for which I didn't have an answer, was to leveraging my crisis instincts to get to where I am today. So I was like, why is that? And when you go back to the beginning of recorded history, all the way back to Sun Tzu and the Art of War, even the Old Testament, there's this underlying theme of leveraging having no retreat to achieve incredible outcomes. Every culture on earth, every language has a fabled burn the boat story where a military leader sabotaged their escape in order to overcome insurmountable odds. We attribute it to Cortez, who was a homicidal maniac, but in reality, it goes back to Sun Tzu and the Art of War. So I wanted to write a book, I'll get to the point, that was meant to advocate for the self, and meant to hold up a mirror to human potential. For those who feel like it doesn't come natural, for those who feel unsupported by the people around them, to say that whatever you suspect about yourself is actually the voice of God. And you are correct. And here's how to do it if it doesn't come naturally. So the book is a little bit of a Trojan horse. Burn the boats is so bombastic. It's sometimes used to mean like burn the boats and everyone else can go to hell. And the reality is the book is actually the opposite. It's an empathetic journey of discovery to show how the most prominent people in America had to burn their metaphorical boats before they could go forward. For me, the boat I had to burn was shame. Shame of that, of the origin story of poverty, sense of failure for being unable to save my mother. I carried all this baggage that at every time I had to cross a threshold to embrace my full potential, there was a metaphorical boat I needed to burn. So the book takes people through that journey.
Wow, just absolutely amazing. And at the end of the interview, certainly we'll share where the loyal listeners can buy this amazing book. Burn the Boats, it's an expression I have to share with you before picking up the book I had never heard of. It seems like in your mind, though, this was the title you wanted to use. There was no question about that.
Yeah, there was no question because there was these moments in my career where the phrase kept coming up and it was like it was following me, right? And one of them was for those football fans out there, I worked with Rex Ryan when I used to oversee the New York Jets. Rex Ryan was the coach and I was the head of the business function there. And one night, and I think it was 2012 or 2011, I forget, right before any NFL team plays a game at 8 o'clock, they all convene in the hotel and it's only like a 15-minute meeting. And the meeting is meant to be a catalyst. It's the last thing they hear collectively as a team. And so Rex Ryan, on the eve of playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Pittsburgh fans are rabid. It's very hard to win a road game. We were, I think, in a 4-game losing streak. And Rex gets up there and gives this speech and tells the story of Hernan Cortez. And he tells, and he's a very emotive guy. His jowls are vibrating when he tells the story. So he tells the story of Cortez burning 11 of his ships before he takes on the Aztecs. And he breaks down with tears and says, "He burned the boats. All I'm asking you to do is give me 4 quarters." And the next day, we win, obviously, or else I wouldn't be telling you the story and the book would be called something else. But we win the game. And the New York Times does a front page article about how when they asked the players where did this team come from, where they didn't play like they had played before, and they all tell this story. Rex told us about burning the boats and that there was another level of commitment that we hadn't accessed yet. And it inspired us. And they did a big story about that speech and his Churchillian gift. So my point being, I felt like the universe was telling me, write a book to tell your story in a way that is useful to inspire others. The die is never cast. And give them a manual that can enable them to overcome whatever things haunt them and whatever is happening around them so they can achieve their full purpose. To be honest with you, the credentials I've achieved on the wall that I'm looking at right now, the press secretary or the Fordham Law degree, they're all meaningless to me. What has become meaningful is to use my life story and the death of my mother and everything I've been through to inspire other people to meet me somewhere on that journey, not as a, 40-something-year-old white male who's presumably wealthy, to meet me as the kid eating government cheese, selling flowers, watching mom die in the room next door, receiving boxes of food from the Catholic Church and say, "Oh, okay, I can connect with you. And if you can do it, I can do it too." So that is the journey I'm on. It is the most
Wow.
fulfilling. It is honestly the most fulfilling thing I've ever done with my life. If I were to die tomorrow, I would feel self-actualized because up until this point, I wasn't sure what the moral of the story is. I think the moral of the story is to use a story to hold up a mirror, to human potential.
Oh, we are so blessed to have someone of your ilk today, Matt, on Thank God for Monday. Now, it's interesting because as a long-suffering fan of the New York Jets, 1969 was way too long ago. It's not coincidental that their most successful seasons the past several years were under your leadership. So
Thank
props
you.
for
I don't know if
those.
that's really true, but I'm going to take credit for it because if the opposite was true, I would also be blamed for it.
Let's peel the onion, Matt, a little bit about some of the central themes of your great book here. One of them, I find this very, very interesting. Submit to the greatness of others. You don't often hear about this at all. What is this all about, please?
So you can imagine I set the scene of this little boy trying to save his mother, feeling disillusioned that nobody cares enough to intervene. A kid, you're not equipped, right? And then you hope that there's a savior or a hero is going to come in, then no one ever comes. And so after that disillusionment phase, you have a choice. Are you going to take matters in your own hands, or are you going to feel like a victim? And for me, I always said to my mother one time when I was 15 years old, I was like, "Mom, from now on, things don't happen to me, I happen to things. I do not want to live my life like a victim." And she was beaten up by life and felt very depressed.
Wow.
And so I decided to take matters into my own hands. And so the point of that story is a lot of my early days were as a lone wolf. Like, you know what? Like a player who says, "Give me the ball, coach," right? Like, "I'll get it done." And I felt that way until life brought me to my knees, until I went through a series of setbacks. I had cancer when I was 32.
Oh.
I was divorced in my early 30s, a failed marriage, just a failure every which way, failure physically, failure emotionally. And life brought me to my knees. And what was amazing in that moment, I swear, I tell this story in the book only for a second, but I really feel like I had an intervention from God late one night, when I had a little voice in my head when I was most desperate. That said, "Matthew, you are okay." Such simple words, right? But it was the first time I felt like someone of unquestionable authority told me that I was okay. And
Oh.
from that very moment forward, I began to reconstruct myself, not as a lone wolf, but as somebody being guided by a greater authority and somebody who could just finally lean into others. Does that make sense? It was the first moment I felt like I could
Makes
rely
sense.
on another human being, even though I don't know where that was coming from. And I began to realize, like, I'd rather marvel at the greatness of others and be humbled that I have more to learn, more capacity, more growth. And because I changed my mindset, I began to seek out exceptionalism to feel humbled by it and to bask in the glory of other people's greatness. And by doing that, I did some of the greatest deals of my entire life. To give you a quick example, another fellow Jets fan, my condolences for you, by the way, is Gary, my partner Gary Vaynerchuk. And around that same time is when I met him at a bagel store in New Jersey. I ended up backing him with 8 Jets tickets to launch his firm called VaynerMedia. Fast forward, VaynerMedia is the largest independent social media firm on planet Earth, and I am his partner.
Oh
And
my God.
I'm telling you, if I don't have that slight adjustment in the way I view the world, that you can do a lot better if you draft behind other people and submit to their greatness, I never would have achieved that success. So the point of that story in the book is to say, if you really want to achieve great things, when you see someone else who's doing amazing work, submit to the greatness that they possess and help unlock or magnify or amplify whatever it is they're doing. Everyone has uncovered or unprotected flanks that need to be buttressed, right? And I use the language in the book: are you somebody who pokes holes, or are you somebody who plugs holes? Are you somebody, when you see a deficiency, do you poke at it, or do you attempt to plug it? So that pivot in my early 30s is when I started plugging holes and submitting to the greatness of others. And it's why I'm here right now. My wife is a perfect example. I got remarried, and my wife is true greatness, and submitting to her greatness has enabled us to build everything you see, the entire book, me being on Shark Tank. It's all because of my relationship.
That is just so incredible, certainly. Now, I have to say there's another theme that comes out, and it's called different types of toxic leaders. This is very interesting to me because I only thought there was one type of toxic leader. Talk about this, please.
Yeah, and I look, there are probably more, there's sub themes, but the reason why not to write like a book on organizational psychology, even though I'm obsessed with the topic, I really wrote that section of the book to give a voice to themes that people can feel, but they can't articulate, but they're actually holding them down. And so let's use one in particular that's very hard to articulate. What's great when you write a book as an author, you get to make up words, which is so fun. So I created I articulated a type of toxic leadership that everyone in this call, everyone rather listening to this interview, will recognize. It's the withholder. It's the insecure leader who knows that somebody who works for them thrives on approval. Maybe they're a pleaser. Oftentimes artists have this, right? They want their art to
Sure.
be they're insecure, they're vulnerable. That leader knows that if I withhold praise that you deserve, I can keep you destabilized and never realizing your full worth, and you'll never advocate for it. So in the book, I put words to this because the reason why it's so important, one of the things that holds people back, the metaphorical boats, is the echo chamber around them. So if you're a pleaser and you work for a toxic withholder, you are constantly destabilized. They're always, let's use some football metaphor here, they're always moving the goalpost. And so it's my attempt to build the argument that in order to burn the boats, you need to surround yourself with the right people in the foxhole. If you are working for a toxic leader or withholder, you're always going to feel destabilized because it's never good enough. So back to my original meta theme of saying, I want to hold up a mirror to human potential. That comes from a lot of angles, within and without. There's the within, there's the anxiety and the imposter syndrome, but there's the without and the people who are around you, including those five types of toxic leaders.
Thank you. That is so enlightening. Let's talk about one more central theme. It's called gut sandwiches, insights mixed with data and intuition. Explain this for us, please, Matt.
Okay, so another metaphorical boat that we all need to burn when we need to do great things is the search for validation, actually. The need for validation is a boat that needs to be burned because this is a little hard to unpack, but opportunity arrives before the tipping point of evidence. The magnitude of an opportunity has an inverse relationship with the amount of evidence there is to support it, obviously. So when Steve Jobs was like, I want to carry my U2 collection in my pocket, and he started talking to people like, well, that's not possible. The CD Walkman only holds, one CD with 12 songs on each side. And so if Steve Jobs had waited for enough validation and evidence to support the need for the iPod, rather, he never would have launched it. So it's really important for the audience to know who's listening, that if you have a really ambitious goal, the fact that there's very little evidence to support it, the fact that when you consult certain friends, they give you that look of like, what are you talking about? Don't take that as evidence for why it's not a good idea, because most often the greatest ideas actually had no support. And so the gut sandwich is language I came to simply articulate that. So what is the gut sandwich? It's an intuition, what I call maybe a proprietary insight that you have about the way the world should work and the way things can be done differently. That's your first part. That's the bread. And then the meat of it is data that you use to give yourself conviction that it's a decent idea, some degree of traction, some evidence in the universe that this is how things should be. But the reason why gut is the other piece of bread is because that you're never going to get a green light from data, especially if it's a big idea. And what pe the re one of the things that holds people back, one of the boats, is they sit around endlessly for approval or validation or data. But by the time you get it, it's too late. There's an amazing, I would argue, everyone should read this. There's an amazing essay by Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson, called Self-Reliance. And it's my favorite piece of writing that I've been reading since I was a little kid, when in those dark days sitting in that apartment in Queens. And it talks about the indignity of having to receive your ideas from another, from bards and sages, he calls. This idea that we have a spontaneous insight in the middle of the night, an epiphany, but we don't have the confidence to act on our intuition. And yet we're force-fed our own innovations and insights later when someone had the courage to act. And so I wrote that and came up with that language to encourage people and to show them that the greatest innovations and insights actually were born of gut sandwiches, and the intuition gave you the green light, not the data.
Oh, that is so inspiring to me, and I'm sure the listeners as well. No doubt
Well,
about
thank you. I love talking about this topic.
You have accomplished so much, Matt. It's just incredible. Is there one particular accomplishment in which you are especially fond of? I know that's
I
a
mean,
hard
it's
question.
probably honestly, it's really the only one. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but anybody successful lives in a constant state of, of being aggrieved, feeling like they didn't do good enough, or, and I certainly do. I don't experience a ton of joy, but the thing that does give me joy is that I didn't write a book. I engineered an outcome. I engineered an outcome, which was somebody out there would read that, feel seen, and would cross the threshold. I always say, I am never the genesis, but I am often the catalyst. I'm not the genesis of
Wow.
I'm not the genesis of a groundbreaking idea, but I can be the catalyst for the book. So I'll tell you a quick story. I get an email, a message on LinkedIn, and I really also wanted to celebrate female entrepreneurs in this book, but in a subtle, non-preachy way, right? So I highlight a lot of really strong women, which have surrounded me my whole life. But I get a message on LinkedIn from a woman named Isabella, and she said, "Hey Matt, I just want you to know I'd read your book, and I want you to let you know that I quit my job today." And I'm like, "This happens a lot to me, by the way." And of course, it catches my breath. And she's like, "I have an idea for a company. I'm going to launch it." She tells me a little bit of the idea. "Do you mind if I circle back in a couple of months and let you know where I'm at?" "Sure." Now, of course, I get nervous. This happens a lot. And then a few months later, she circled back and sends me the deck. And in the deck, she recruited two female co-founders who were incredible. And when I read the deck, I was like, "You know, this might be the one. This person might be the one for whom the book was written." And I said, "What's your cell phone number? I want to talk to you and understand how this all happened." So I call her up, and she's like, "So I'm very close to my mom, and my mom, we're first generation immigrants from, I believe, Colombia." And she says, I kept agonizing to my mother that I have this idea, and I feel like my purpose on this earth is to pursue this idea. But every time I bring it up with my friends or colleagues, like, they all come up with reasons about why I shouldn't do it, right?" So her mother's true story. Her mother says, "Baby, I don't know. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't have the answers. But I read this book, and I think this book might have the answers. I'm going to send it to you." Her
Oh my.
mom, yeah. So her mother sends the book. The book gives her the courage to quit, to launch the company. Now I'm an advisor to this incredible young woman who is now being written about everywhere because she
Oh.
burned the boats. And so it's a long way of saying every day I wake up from a direct message from somebody on earth, all over the world, who says that that book did something different than any other book they ever read. And what I love is, like, that's not an accident. Like, I really felt like I'm put on this earth to transmit the belief on behalf of the underdog to do what I felt I did not have the support to do when I was younger. And I'm going to leave you. I'll stop here with this thought. I think when we go through really hard things and we come out the other side, we have a fundamental choice. Are you going to be bitter and deny to others what was denied to you? In my day, I had to walk 5 miles to school, so you will too. Or are you going to supply to others what was denied to you? Because by virtue of its absence in your life, you know how meaningful its presence would have been, and you want to supply it to others. So I choose to respond to what I witnessed by saying, "I'm going to supply that which was missing from my life to others." So, for example, I write scholarships to single mothers, my wife and I,
Oh.
who go to Queens College. And I don't say this as like a hero. I say this because I was given a front row seat to just how impossibly hard it is to be a single mom, take care of your kids, and try to go to get an education. So I write these scholarships, and I'm telling you, when I do these Zooms with all these moms, I feel like I'm sitting in a room full of LeBron James. It's like there's nothing more extraordinary than a human being, suffering and aspiring and a striving nonetheless, even while trying to survive. And
Sure.
so that's my point. As you asked me, so what am I proudest of? I'm proudest of that I really set out to write a book that is doing exactly what I set out to do. There is nothing that in my life that has ever brought me more professional joy.
Oh, it's just amazing, certainly. Speaking of the book, our final question, we've saved the best for last. Where can our loyal listeners purchase Burn the Boats? How can they best follow you, Matt?
Yes, so the book is available on Amazon. I have two requests. If you purchase the book and you read it, if you would please write a review on Amazon, it means everything. I spend most of my time on LinkedIn or Instagram. It's M Higgins. I'm easier to follow. I read every single ounce of feedback about the book because it helps me understand how to get this message out. And I just want to thank you so much for giving me your time and an audience.
Oh, thank you. Certainly. No doubt about that. Listeners, no excuse. This book is available all over the place. Please do yourself a yeoman's favor. Buy this book, not only for you, buy copies for others. Share the good. We've had a great Franciscan on with us today. He could have held on to all this good. No, what did he do? He came on, thank God for money. He wrote this great book. He shared the good. Now it's your turn. Please, please, please do your part. Buy this book, share the good with the rest of the world. Matt Higgins, we can't thank you enough for gracing us today, and thank God for Monday. We've been enlightened, yes, we've been much more inspired. all continued success, joy, happiness, contributionalism, amazing work you are doing around the world, certainly.
All right, well,
Thank you
thank
so
you,
much.
everyone. Have a great weekend and burn the boats.
Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Matt Higgins does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.